The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Greetings, everyone. I'm Jennifer Green for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Teen Magazines. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from teenvogue.com. Our first article today from teenvogue.com: Why Lil Nas X's Arrest is More Proof Police Have No Business Treating the Mentally Ill. This article was written by Lex McMenamin on September 9th, and there is a note. This article includes discussion of mental illness and police killings. Early in the morning on August 21st, Lil Nas X was arrested by Los Angeles police while walking around in underwear and cowboy boots. He was later charged with four felonies, accused of battery on a police officer and resisting arrest, as reported by NBC News. Before news came of the arrest and charges, TMZ publicized footage of the musician, whose legal name is Montero Lamar Hill, during the episode, and online commentators questioned whether the clips were part of a stunt. That speculation was clearly disproven by the seriousness of the charges, as well as comments from Hill's father, Robert Stafford, to the media. Stafford described crying with Hill in jail, separated by glass. For a 26-year-old to have to deal with what he's dealing with, to be a breadwinner for a lot of people, the inability to change his mother's situation, and the pressure he puts on himself, Stafford told The Times, referencing Hill's mother's documented struggles with addiction. We shed tears with each other for over a minute, and I had to tell him that what you're going through is normal. We all have breakdowns every now and then, but the difference is yours gets played out in the public eye. I live in a city where people regularly experience mental health episodes in public, forced to visibly because they are unhoused, moving between shelters, or they are otherwise vulnerable. Many of us have witnessed a friend or family member have a mental health crisis, easily identified by a loved one's uncharacteristic mannerisms or behavior, or just something seeming off. Concerned people generally call 911. According to the Policing Project at New York University School of Law, in one large U.S. city, wellness check requests accounted for about 7% of all 911 calls, more than theft or noise complaints, and about as much as calls about domestic violence. As the Policing Project notes, rarely are those calls in reference to a suspected crime, but in most cases, the police are sent to respond. This has happened to my family members, too. A mental health episode was worsened by an inability to reach mental health care. Because of long wait times and defunded social services, and meant the only treatment this person could get came via police. Why is this a problem? Generally, police aren't trained or qualified to respond to mental health crises, and can often further activate the person in need of care, even making them distrustful of those offering support, including their own family or medical team. This family member of mine was traumatized by their experiences with the mental health system, including police and treatment centers, experiences that sometimes resulted in being physically injured. It made them less open to the mental health care they needed because they associated it with violence and confinement they had been through. It took years of working with health care providers who respected my family members' autonomy and right to participate in their own health care plan, and distance from an experience that criminalized and victimized them, to save their life. It took just as long to mend relationships between them and other relatives, myself included, because of the intensity and difficulty of helping someone who can't protect themselves during a police interaction, while also negotiating with police on their behalf. This person has experienced periods of incarceration and institutionalization, but they have also gotten the chance to heal. We now understand that how they were treated for being crazy wasn't only their fault, it was wrong. But many are not so lucky. There is no evidence that sending the police to conduct welfare checks is effective in reducing harmful outcomes, the Policing Project states. On the other hand, rights abolitionist and disability studies academic Liat Ben-Moshe, in the introduction to the groundbreaking book Decarcerating Disability, conditions of confinement, meaning incarceration, but also mental health facilities and other institutions, may cause further mental breakdown for those entering the system with diagnoses of mental, psychiatric, or intellectual disabilities. When you bring the element of policing into a mental health crisis of any kind, the risks can increase exponentially, even becoming deadly. According to the Washington Post, over a 3-year period, police officers shot and killed the individuals they were called to assist at least 178 times. Furthermore, it's impossible to downplay the role of race and other identities that Hill holds, like queerness, in the severity of treatment and risk. Argues May Rood in Out on August 22nd, for black men in particular, a mental health crisis can be deadly. According to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, CDC, suicide is the second leading cause of death for African Americans between the ages of 15 and 24, with black men being 4 times as likely to die by suicide than black women. And, as Rood continues, as a black gay man, he's even more at risk. As we saw with the death of Jordan Neely, racism and ableism, that is, discrimination based on disability, against those we perceive as visibly mentally ill, can even result in politicians and media outlets celebrating your death at the hands of a vigilante. In 2023, 30-year-old Neely, a black man who was unhoused and had been a longtime subway performer, was choked to death on the New York City subway by a 26-year-old white ex-Marine named Daniel Penny. In December, Penny was found not guilty of criminally negligent homicide for the death of Neely. On the New York Post's cover the following morning, Penny was credited with protecting subway riders from a man accused of yelling, while Mayor Eric Adams apparently recognized Penny's actions as doing what we should have done as a city. I refuse to imagine the horrific potential outcomes if Lil Nas X had been without a public profile, the privileges attained through his Grammy wins, family members that cared for him, and the pure chance that he survived that police interaction. What has already happened is horrific enough. I know from personal experience with my loved ones that our way of dealing with the mentally ill is much like how we treat those we see as criminals. When people are arrested to ostensibly help them, this can create, or for many, perpetuate, cycles of incarceration. They may be pushed into psychiatric institutions for the mentally ill, which also rely on carceral ways of functioning, such as denying autonomy and agency to those held there, physically restraining patients, and more. This is why so many who study ableism and the institutionalization of the mentally ill like Ben Moshe, call for mechanisms for people to control their local police forces as well as their own treatment. Hill pled not guilty to the 4 felony charges, which, if convicted, could result in up to 5 years in state prison. We know that incarceration is not the answer for mental illness and is likely to worsen mental health. In Hill's own limited statement on the experience, he acknowledged the suffering caused by his initial interaction with police. "That was terrifying. That was terrifying. That was a terrifying last 4 days," he said in an Instagram story video, his only public comment so far about the arrest. "But your girl's gonna be all right." And there is a note. If you or someone you know is going through a crisis, please call the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline at 1-800-273-TALK 8255 or find the Trevor Project's crisis services at thetrevorproject.org. Our next article from teenvogue.com. Who was Charlie Kirk? What to know about the Turning Point USA founder and his views? This article was written by Brittany McNamara and Lex McMenamin on September 11th, and there is a note. Content warning. This story refers to a viral, violent video of a shooting. This story was first published on September 10th. Far-right political activist Charlie Kirk was shot dead on September 10th while speaking at Utah Valley University. Kirk, the CEO and co-founder of Turning Point USA, was 31. The shooting occurred as Kirk was speaking in front of a crowd at the Utah University, a kickoff event for the Turning Point's American Comeback National Tour that had received nearly 1,000 petition signatures calling for it to be canceled, reports the Associated Press. According to CNN, Kirk was asked about the statistics of transgender people linked to mass shootings, an active and misleading talking point on the right. Kirk was answering the question when he was fatally shot. A video circulated on social media and verified by the Associated Press shows Kirk being shot while mid-answer. Officials confirmed soon after that Kirk had been shot, and nearly 2 hours later, President Donald Trump wrote on Truth Social that Kirk had died. Overnight, several right-wing figures called for violence and war against the left as vengeance for Kirk's death, reported Wired. As of 10:45 a.m. ET on September 11th, the shooter has still not been identified or found, and the investigation is still underway, according to the New York Times. The shooter's motives and political affiliation are similarly unknown. Utah Valley University closed its campus, canceled classes, and instructed students to secure in place until they can safely be escorted off campus as the investigation continues. Who was Charlie Kirk? A Trump ally, Kirk was popular among the far right, known for rallying young people around conservative ideas and around the president. Kirk often traveled to college campuses where he would debate with students on popular right-wing talking points. He is often credited with rallying young conservatives in a new wave of political activism. During these appearances, Kirk frequently spoke out against abortion and reproductive rights, espoused anti-trans ideology, spread COVID-19 misinformation, among other controversial and often prejudiced opinions. Kirk was gifted at digital attention-grabbing throughout his career as a right-wing commentator. in 2024, prior to another debate campus tour. His appearance on the video platform Jubilee, debating young liberals, went viral. Kirk has been outspoken against gun control legislation, frequently defending access to guns during debates and speaking engagements. In a Turning Point speech last year, Kirk called shooting deaths as a result of gun access the cost to liberty, comparing gun deaths to the risk of driving and auto accidents. He made similar comments in 2023, calling gun deaths worth it in exchange for Second Amendment rights, shortly after a mass shooting killed 3 children and 3 adults at the Christian Covenant School in Nashville, Tennessee. Around the same time that Kirk was shot, a shooting at a Colorado school was also unfolding. According to the Denver Post, 2 teens were injured, with one still in critical condition, and the teenage shooter dead after turning the gun on himself as of the morning after the shooting. Kirk started Turning Point USA, which on its website claims to help supporters on college campuses take up arms in the culture war against the left. In 2012, he was 18. What is Turning Point USA? Turning Point USA, often shortened to TPUSA, operates as a series of chapters on university campuses helmed by founder Kirk until his death. The group aims to build the most organized, active, and powerful conservative grassroots activist network on high school and college campuses across the country, its website says. Though it initially failed to gain traction, reports the Associated Press, Kirk's zeal for confronting liberals in academia eventually won over an influential set of conservative financiers for the group. According to its website, the organization is represented on more than 3,500 college campuses. In 2024, the group planned to spend $100 million on Get Out the Vote efforts in coordination with the Trump campaign. As of September 10, navigating to Turning Point USA's website brings you to a pop-up of a smiling Kirk advertising a 47 hat in homage to President Trump in exchange for any donation to the organization. The organization has long maintained a professor watch list to allegedly expose and document college professors who discriminate against conservative students and advance leftist propaganda in the classroom. In 2023, an Arizona State University professor on TPUSA's watch list was physically attacked by someone associated with Turning Point USA. In 2017, TPUSA was the subject of an investigation by the Chronicle of Higher Education over allegations that they had violated their 501c3 status by funneling money to student government candidates on campuses across the country. Kirk's controversies. In the wake of his death, several clips of Kirk making controversial, offensive, or inaccurate statements on subjects ranging from abortion to gun control circulated on social media. In one, Kirk argues that abortion is worse than the Holocaust. In another, he is asked if a photo of a fetus is a human being, and he responds affirmatively, immediately revealed to be a dolphin fetus. He also spoke against abortion, even in cases of rape. Particular attention has been paid to Kirk's comments on gun control because of his cause of death. I think it's worth to have a cost of, unfortunately, some gun deaths every single year so that we can have the Second Amendment to protect our other God-given rights, Kirk said in 2023. Kirk advocated for guns in schools to prevent school shootings, saying, If our money and our sporting events and our airplanes have armed guards, why don't our children? In January 2025, Media Matters collected several examples of Kirk's controversies in the last few years, from Kirk using anti-trans slurs and calling for gender-affirming care providers to receive a Nuremberg-style trial, to promoting the white supremacist Great Replacement Theory, to, in 2023, calling for President Joe Biden to face the death penalty for crimes against America. Kirk also made anti-Semitic statements in relation to the Great Replacement Theory, as reported by the New York Times. In addition to anti-immigrant statements, Kirk also decried the 1965 Civil Rights Act. During a 2023 Turning Point USA conference, Kirk called it a mistake. "I have a very, very radical view on this, but I can defend it, and I've thought about it," Kirk said. "We made a huge mistake when we passed the Civil Rights Act in the 1960s. In the same speech, Kirk called Martin Luther King Jr. awful and not a good person. In 2024, Kirk called the notion of climate change being an existential threat to humanity complete gibberish, nonsense, and balderdash. Our next article from TeenVogue.com. Why Ethan Slater and Ariana Grande weren't at the VMAs 2025 together. This article was written by Sarah Delgado on September 8th. Ariana Grande had quite the time at the MTV VMAs 2025, but many were left wondering where Ethan Slater was during her big night. ICYMI, Ariana Grande was nominated for 7 awards at this year's VMAs, and ultimately was among the big winners of the night, taking home 3 awards, including the coveted Video of the Year. Clad in a custom Fendi polka dot dress, the Eternal Sunshine singer posed solo for the red carpet at UBS Arena on September 7, 2025, in Elmont, New York, before being joined by an entourage of family and friends, but notably absent from the bunch was her Wicked co-star and IRL partner, Ethan Slater. During the ceremony, Grande sat next to her stylist, Law Roach, best known for his work with Zendaya, and multiple family members, including her parents, Edward Butera and Joan Grande, as well as her brother, Frankie Grande, and his husband, Hale Grande. Rounding off Grande's VIP section was Christian Breslauer, who co-directed Grande's Brighter Days Ahead short film, and his wife, actor Brittany Breslauer. At one point during the night, Grande was also joined by fellow nominee and Rain on Me collaborator Lady Gaga, who got a round of applause from Grande's group. Seeing as Slater did not attend the function with Grande, chatter immediately began online, with some speculating about a potential breakup. Slater and Grande have been reportedly dating since 2023 after meeting on the set of Wicked. The two have kept their relationship mostly private to avoid tabloid speculation. Grande and Slater's last public appearance together was in late April 2025, when the two attended a preview of Little Shop of Horrors at the West Side Theater off Broadway to support Grande's victorious co-star, Liz Gillies. Prior to that, the duo were together at the Oscars, where they were photographed hugging and chatting together throughout the night. Grande was nominated during the night, and Slater had gotten her Glinda pink balloons to celebrate. Multiple users online joked that Slater and Grande could have called it quits after Grande linked up with Blackpink's Rosé to take a photo together before taking the stage, making memes about the viral Rosé curse, which the K-pop star denounced to ID earlier this year. However, as it turns out, Slater and Grande appear to still be going strong. Despite not attending the event in person, Slater did support Grande during the VMAs, resharing MTV's post of her Best Pop winner speech to his Instagram stories as the ceremony concluded. Slater reposted the video of Grande's speech, highlighting her wins for Video of the Year and Best Pop, with added text above and below the clip. Chatter surrounding Slater's absence from the VMAs was intensified by a Star magazine report claiming he was spotted in Jersey City, New Jersey, with his ex-wife Lily J and their son just a couple of days before the awards. While Star's report included no visual evidence, but rather just eyewitness recounts, it did make sense for Slater and J to spend some time together, seeing as the two are still co-parents. While our partnership has changed, our parenthood has not. Both of us fiercely love our son 100% of the time, regardless of how our parenting time is divided, Jay herself wrote in 2024 as part of her viral essay for The Cut. Since making their relationship public, Ariana Grande and Ethan Slater have remained steadfast in their support for one another. In a 2024 interview with Vanity Fair, Grande said of Slater, "No one on this earth tries harder or spreads themselves thinner to be there for the people that he loves and cares about. There is no one on this earth with a better heart, and that is something that no BS tabloid can rewrite in real life." It's unclear why Slater decided to skip the VMAs. He might have had a conflicting commitment, or he might have just not wanted to draw attention to himself with his presence. Earlier this year, Slater notably skipped the Golden Globes, despite Wicked's nominations, which could very well be an effort to protect their peace and relationship. Earlier this year, Slater opened up to GQ about the public's reaction and the relentless news cycle that followed after his and Grande's relationship became public, especially as people started scrutinizing his divorce from Jay. "I am really focused on the real people in my life, who those things affect, and doing right by every real person, and not the Twitter people who comment on it," he told the magazine. We've run out of time for today's episode of Teen Magazines. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Jennifer Green, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Teen Magazines is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. We thank you for listening to the North Carolina